This is the one with the Eighth Doctor.
And a completely new companion.
They land on a planet with the ridiculous name of Red Rocket Rising.
Where not one, but two factions of the Doctor's most deadly enemies are fighting.
Oh, by the way, this is an audiobook.
It's called Blood of the Daleks.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space,
encountering Dalek, Stalinood, and the Cybertronic race.
The Saurons look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello and welcome to, I guess, episode 15, possibly episode audiobook 1 of Who Back When. I am Ponkin, and I am joined today by none other than Merius Kane himself, JD.
That's Kane with a K.
That is Kane with a K. Ladies and gentlemen, I do feel like you deserve an explanation. Flappy is currently on holiday, but will be back at Who Back When in about a month's time. So until then, and thereafter, I hope, you will be enjoying a third voice on this podcast, namely JD, whom you met in the last episode and whom you met again just a moment ago. JD is probably the biggest Doctor Who connoisseur I have ever come across. So much so that at the con just about a week ago, he was referring to individual sentences of individual episodes of serials that he could name, and I'm quite in awe of him. So, we will be reviewing some audiobooks. And JD, would you like to explain which audiobooks we will be reviewing?
Big Finish have done a number of audiobooks now through the years, coming up to 200 plus audiobooks across Doctors 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. They've also done a set of companion chronicles for the sadly deceased Doctors, where companions that they've had narrate in first person a story about them and the Doctor. So all the Doctors are represented.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we even have stories going back to pre An Unearthly Child. In Edge of Destruction, when the TARDIS scanner was zooming back through some of their previous visits, Susan said about a planet Quinnus in the fourth galaxy.
Yes.
And one of the prior audiobooks set before An Unearthly Child is called Quinnus.
Interesting.
Which gives that story. And there is one which is basically about the Susan and Doctor leaving Gallifrey. So they've done audiobooks on practically everything, and they are both narrated by the lovely Carol Ann Ford, who was at the convention.
Yes, she was.
And she narrates a lot of the early Doctor Who stuff. So www.bigfinish.com.
Yes, absolutely. Or download their stuff on iTunes. You can find audiobooks there as well, and on Amazon. Okay, got to ask you a question, because people are probably wondering, why are we starting with the Eighth Doctor Adventures?
Two reasons. The first is that with the Big Finish audios, there is no real way to listen to them. They produce a monthly range, which has a combination of third, fourth, and fifth Doctors. They have the Companion Chronicles, the Lost Stories. But there is a great deal of interest in Paul McGann at the moment.
Yes,
with the amazingly good Night of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Which
I'm assuming everyone who is listening to this has seen at this point.
I think even people who don't like Doctor Who will have watched this at some point. And in conjunction with Big Finish, the BBC did a set of four seasons of McGann stories. And ultimately, these are leading up towards the darker Doctor we see in Night of the Doctor. So with the interest around McGann, it seems like a good place to begin, somewhere which everyone can jump onto.
Yeah, plus we also get to follow one single Doctor across all these stories, as opposed to jumping from Doctor to Doctor.
And we get one of the companions that he mentions in his regeneration speech.
Yes, we do. Lucy Miller.
Lucy
what a woman.
Miller.
Okay, well, shall we jump right in?
As the story jumps right in, with the Doctor piloting the TARDIS, going haywire as it always does, and out of thin air,
appears Lucy Miller.
A northern girl with an attitude.
Yes, a foul-mouthed woman from Blackpool.
Played by the amazing Sheridan Smith. The one good thing about, not the one good thing, the many good things about the audiobooks is that they attract some of amazing talent. Big Finish have got not only Paul McGann, who is a film and TV actor,
yeah,
but Sheridan Smith playing the companion, who is well known to British audiences as Jonathan Creek's companion recently, Gavin and Stacey, Two Pints of Lager, Packet of Crisps. And not only that, she is a two-time Olivier Award-winning stage actress, as well as a BAFTA Award-winning actress. Playing a companion on an audiobook for Doctor Who fans.
Yeah. How amazing is that? I'm so excited. Okay, so the Doctor is piloting the TARDIS. Everything is going completely haywire. Lucy Miller appears out of nowhere. It is very reminiscent. I cannot remember her name for the life of me. But Tennant's really annoying companion who turns up the runaway
bride. The amazing Donna Noble, played by the great Catherine Tate.
Yeah, I see. Well, while I may disagree with your use of adjectives, do you agree with me? It's very reminiscent of how she appears in the story.
It is indeed. It is very reminiscent of Runaway Bride, but it is before it.
Okay. So she turns up and is quite upset, doesn't know what's going on, and the way that we are introduced to the Doctor is spectacular. He remains cool throughout the entire ordeal, just saying, well, there was some sort of rift in space-time, approximately 2.4 meters to my left, and then outstepped an intruder, you. And it is so dark, so awesome.
And he does it, he does an amazing job. He's being railed up by this young girl, and you know, she's calling him an alien weirdo and a frock coated ponce wearing a wig.
Oh my god, yes. Wait. Ponce made me think of Withnail and I, where he turns up and goes, I've just been called a ponce.
I've been called a ponce. What fucker said that?
The wig must be I still haven't seen the movie, but it must be a reference to the movie where he's clearly wearing a wig. And she does say, you're wearing clothes that you would see in some stupid TV movie.
He wears funny stuff, like an old hippie, or, you know, something you'd see in some boring film.
You know, she is obviously the sort of girl that goes to Primark.
Mm.
And, you know, seeing someone in very upmarket Edwardian clothes and, you know...
That's a brilliant observation, by the way.
And, you know, he threatens to take her to Preston.
Yeah, which is not pleased with.
And to be honest, if we have any listeners in Preston, I apologise, but, you know, I wouldn't want to go there either.
Well, so we learned that she's from the year 2006, and when the Doctor tries to take her back to 2006... he fails. There's some sort of force field protecting Northern England in 2006, and he is essentially, or they are, bounced to this alien world, populated by humans, though, this human colony called Red Rocket Rising, and essentially crash.
Lucy, not really very happy about this, and the Doctor's really bad piloting of the TARDIS, storms out. And the Doctor, in a strange way, actually bothers checking whether the air is breathable and there is gravity.
I know.
Certainly not like the old days when he went to Skaro last time and couldn't be bothered checking the radiation meter himself. without Susan, he's bothered now checking all the dials himself.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it's Lucy who doesn't really seem to care about anything. She just steps outside. So they're outside, they're in the middle of the road, and they're having a bit of an argument when all of a sudden a car, as Lucy points out, also piloted by someone who doesn't know how to drive, starts approaching them quite swiftly and crashes straight into the TARDIS.
Lucy is more disappointed at the moment that her alien planet doesn't have two suns and it's very dark there. She mentions she used to go out clubbing in Blackpool on a Saturday night, so it's used to dark and miserable. And that we have to mention at this point that these are audiobooks.
Yes.
And you have to go through and imagine everything that's happening. And part of this is the music. And the music when Lucy steps out on this alien planet for the first time and is looking around, you can imagine how you know, the Sheridan Smith version of Lucy Miller stepping out of the TARDIS, looking around, seeing this haze of dust in the sky blotting out the sun.
Yeah.
And the music is telling you that. So the score on these audiobooks is the thing which takes it from just listening to someone reading a script to you actually being there.
Yeah, now you're making me think that we need some sort of background music for this podcast. But yeah, it is very well done. It's not just that scene, it is throughout.
Absolutely, and throughout, because now the car has crashed, you can hear in the background very, very slightly, and it builds up through the next scene.
Yeah, a mob. Fact
that the angry mob that is coming for this driver and the official in the car with her.
Yeah, so let's get back to the car. They obviously run up to help, and it turns out the driver is dead, but there are two survivors, and these two survivors are, we find out in a little moment, acting President Eileen Clint and a woman named Asha. Can't remember her surname.
Asha Griven.
There you go. Well done. Obviously you remember that. So, and these two, Clint and Asha, henceforth referred to as AK, they are shackled together.
They get out of the car, and the Doctor and Lucy are wondering where they were driving in such a bad manner towards. And as they do that, in the background, you hear this mob approaching. And AK turns around and gets the Doctor and Lucy to basically protect them.
That's true. So we introduce the let's split up and meet back up in 10 minutes trope, in that Lucy leaves with AK, and the Doctor stays put to greet this mob, and we have this fantastic little interplay between him and the mob leader, where he tries to essentially give them as much information as possible using nothing but placeholders. He's like, yes, well, those two, they left for the place, what's it called? Oh, the spaceport. Yes, the spaceport.
You know, Lucy was being quite sensible at this point.
Mm.
She did turn around and say, can't we just go back in your blue box and get off away from this rampaging mob? But once more, and it shows that even, you know, 40 years later, the Davis principle still applies, because this time the Doctor and Lucy are cut off from the TARDIS by a rampaging mob.
Yes, they are. Well done, Davis. He's absolutely nailed it with that. So in interacting with the mob, the Doc learns about a man named Professor Martez. And apparently this man, he was some sort of scientist criminal, I guess, a grave robber they refer to him as. And there's some sort of connection between him and Asha, is I think essentially what we learn at this point. So he then gets the mob to run elsewhere, and he joins the others shortly thereafter. And they have a little bit of a chat.
Yeah, and the other two are talking to Lucy, and they find out that Eileen Clint is the acting president, and Asha Griven was the assistant to Martez. And there is obviously quite a good deal of information given out that maybe that Martez was doing a lot of things that he really shouldn't have been doing.
Exactly. We're going to find out a lot more about that in a little bit, but suffice to say, it's this sort of Frankensteinian type story with Martez. We'll get back to that. So they chat for a little bit, then they split up again. AK run off in one direction, and the Doc and Lucy head off elsewhere. So we follow Clint and Asha for a little bit, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, they go to Martez's old lab.
Correct. Yeah. But the reason why the Doctor and Lucy don't get back to the TARDIS and go away, because now they haven't got anyone to protect and there's no rampaging mob, the Davis principle has turned, this time from an angry mob, into acid rain.
Yes,
which
you're
is
right.
Cutting them off from the TARDIS.
Oh, I forgot about that. Well done. So they run off, but we get to follow Clint and Asha for a little bit. And in Martez's old lab, basically what we learn is that Asha, well, she essentially reveals her utter devotion to Martez's plan and says that, no, he wanted to take boost humanity's evolution and all these little hints at experimenting with genetics and experimenting with corpses and et cetera, gross stuff, absolutely gross. So meanwhile, Doc and Lucy they meet a chap named Tom Cardwell, who is a complete nutter, but a very sane one, one might say.
You know, he is Gorilla Dave.
He is Gorilla Dave. He's Gorilla Dave with the tinfoil hat, is what he is.
Yeah, and we should mention that the guest stars in this episode. So playing Tom Cardwell is Kenneth Cranham.
Yeah.
Who, while his name is probably not familiar, he's done an awful lot of television, pretty much everything that's required a Scotsman since 1980. Asher Greiven is played by Hayley Ashwell, who went on to have a great career being Captain America's love interest. She plays Peggy in the Captain America film.
What? That's her?
Yes, that's
her. That
is
awesome.
And Eileen Clint is played by Angie Watts from EastEnders, Anita Dobson, who is one of the great sort of soap actresses of our time.
Awesome.
So, again, you know, this is the first of the BBC audiobooks, and they've got, you know, three fairly well-known or up-and-coming stars.
Yeah.
And this doesn't go away through the rest of the season. They keep people of this caliber keep cropping up.
It's pretty impressive. It's actually a little bit surprising that these audiobooks aren't bigger than they are. I know they're already quite big, but it seems with casts like this, they should be taking over.
Well, these audiobooks, this Eighth Doctor Adventures, were actually played on BBC Radio. Okay. So these hit a mass audience. They Big Finish have hit onto a really good thing with these.
Oh, well done, Big Finish.
Meanwhile, in the facility.
Back at the facility, well, back at Martez's old lab, yeah. We have AK hearing a message from... wait, hang on. Do they hear a message from the Daleks? They hear a message from the Daleks.
They do.
There are Daleks approaching in a spaceship. They are there basically on a quote-unquote rescue mission. But we don't get that much detail at this point, I think. I think we get back to this message, do we not?
We do later on. All we hear in the background is the unmistakable voice of Nick Briggs on the radio, and all you need is like 2 seconds of listening to him, and you know that the Daleks are appearing.
This is a Dalek, yeah. So then cut back to Tom Cardwell's Crazy Shack, where Tom is telling a story about a crashed spaceship. And he has now pulled a gun and he's holding them at gunpoint, explaining that he saw a crashed spaceship some time ago. We don't really know how long ago. And he, this is the reason for all of his paranoia. He's taken some readings of the dock. He's noticed that he has two hearts. He has a body temperature of, I think, 15 degrees or something. And is clearly alien. And Tom, old Tommy boy, he thinks that the doc's a bad guy, essentially.
And Lucy is not disagreeing with him one little bit.
No, in fact, she says, well, it's true that the doc is a Time Lord, which is going to factor in a moment. But he's actually pretty harmless.
Well, he's a patronizing git, but that's no reason to shoot him.
Yes.
and this, you know, Lucy and the doctor are obviously not friends at this point. No. They, you know, they don't want to be anywhere near each other. It's like they've been married for 20 years, you know, it's at this point. They're not talking.
But then they hear part of a recorded message from Acting President Clint. This is an automated recording, or an automated message, in which she says that there is a rescue coming. She's received word from the Dahl, at which point it gets cut off. And all hell breaks loose in the Crazy Shack. Lucy grabs the gun, blows the hell out of the radio, and the Doctor is quite upset because he wanted to hear the rest of the recording.
Meanwhile, on the Clint and Griven place,
yeah.
They are talking about the Daleks, these wonderful aliens of compassion and friendliness that are coming through the dust cloud. All of the people that left this planet, because we learn that a lot of people left this planet after it got destroyed, they're
coming
back.
One of the things that Tommy explains is that there was a sort of lottery to determine who would get a seat on evacuation ships. And the people who are left there, they've essentially been left to die. And so everyone is eager to get off the planet. We also get a little bit of detail about what Martez was up to. If I'm not mistaken, Clint and Asher, they talk about he was stealing corpses to use the human tissue for experiments. And after a while, he escalated his process because he was in need of living tissue. And meanwhile, Ash is just going, this is fine. This dude was great. He was such a nice guy.
Meanwhile, at the shack, Lucy is whinging at the doctor.
Oh,
because
my God.
She took the gun. She shot the radio, which she doesn't care about one little bit.
Nope.
She saved the doctor's life.
Yeah.
And the doctor is not at all happy about it.
No, all he does is empty the gun of bullets and chastise her for having left so abruptly.
And wants to know how she knows that he is a Time Lord.
Exactly. So it turns out, through some clever use of NLP on the doc's part, we find out that Lucy is part of some sort of Time Lord's witness protection program. Her memory has not entirely been wiped, but it's been dampened in some way. She can't quite remember what happened, but it is clear that she saw something at some point that she didn't even understand at the time, but she saw something she wasn't meant to see. And for that reason, the Time Lords have placed her in the Doctor's care.
Well, she's not very happy about this.
Well, neither is he.
And neither's he. So he says, right, let's go back to the TARDIS, let's have a word with the Time Lords, let's get you put somewhere else because he's not some sort of intergalactic babysitter.
Yeah.
But like she does a lot in this episode, she storms off in a huff.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be with him, he doesn't want to be with her. And, you know, she's acting completely like most people would if they were thrust into a box with an 800-year-old crazy man in an Edwardian frock coat and a wig.
See, I don't know if that's true. When I started listening to this episode, or to the audiobook, I was thinking, okay, we've gotten to a point where the stories are so incredibly fantastic that there is literally no room to make fun of anything. Because they're so good. The production value is so high. The acting is so great. But this, please excuse the F-bomb, this is fucking dumb. Why would she run off? He is the only person she is even remotely familiar with. She knows that he has a way in there, so he must have a way out. She knows that he has a spaceship of some description. And everyone around her is either a crazy, violent mob or a genuine crazy person wearing a tinfoil hat.
But then again, he's a genuine crazy person wearing what she says is a wig. So, you know, ultimately, you know, whether she runs to him or away from him, she doesn't trust anyone so far. So, yeah, she's not acting like she's being perfectly sane and sensible at this point. But then again, she is on an alien planet when she should be in Primark.
That's true. Okay, fair enough. It's force majeure. Given the circumstances, I'll excuse her behaviour.
So, meanwhile, tinfoil hat guy
runs
out into a celebrating crowd of revelers, since he doesn't understand why the aliens are coming and the people are still standing around, you know, cheering for them.
Yeah, exactly. He's basically there to help Lucy, because he realizes that she's not an alien, she's a human, he just wants to save her, and these Daleks are not to be trusted.
And we hear the three cheers for the Daleks, hip hip.
Yeah,
which is one of the few times that the Daleks have ever been cheered for in any medium.
What, one of the few times? Are you saying there are more times?
I won't spoil it.
Okay, thank you.
So on the Dalek ship, they're communicating with acting President Clint and telling them that they've arrived around the planet and they're about to head down and start landing and saving everyone. But listening in on the conversation with Clint and Graven and the Daleks is the Doctor, who, having given up on trying to find Lucy at this point, has come back to try and save the planet from the Daleks.
Mm. And I'm wondering if maybe he feels a little bit of responsibility for Lucy, even though he doesn't say it. So I'm wondering if maybe he feels bad for just letting her storm off and just being on her own in this crazy post-apocalyptic land.
It's very difficult to say at this point, because he doesn't know her. You know, he's known her for maybe an hour at this point. She was dumped on him and ran off. You know, ultimately, I think he cares more about saving this planet than he does about Lucy at the moment.
Okay, fair enough.
And but he does get to hear the Daleks utter with dripping sarcasm that neither Clint or Griven really get, which is the line that the Daleks are glad to be of assistance.
Yeah, I know. Fantastic line. In fact, we should soundbite that. Soundbite.
Soundbite.
The Daleks are glad to be of assistance.
dance.
Excellent performance. I could have almost believed that wasn't a ruthless killing machine you were talking to.
I have to ask for your forgiveness and for the forgiveness of the ladies and gentlemen of podcast land. My notes on the rest of this story are not hazy. They are non-existent. So while I remember the story, I don't remember the order in which absolutely every scene occurs. Next week, I promise I will be more prepared. So I think maybe you should take the lead on this and I'll add some commentary as you go along.
Well, meanwhile, outside, Lucy is wandering around shouting out for the Time Lords and telling them that the Doctor is a bit crap.
Yeah.
And she could use another taxi and to go somewhere else. Then Gorilla Tom turns up and tells Lucy that the Doctor has been lying to her. And frankly, at this point, Lucy completely believes him.
Yeah, and why wouldn't she?
You know, ultimately, he could be in league with the Daleks, he could be a Dalek agent, neither of them know any different
at
this point. We do, being listening in, but, you know, from their point of view, this is sane. You know, these aliens have arrived at the same time as the Doctor. And, you know, Lucy doesn't believe him. And in the early years of Doctor Who, you had companions stumbling into the TARDIS, and within maybe 10 or 11 seconds...
they knew exactly where they had the Doctor.
And very soon, the Vicky Irritation Index will leave and be replaced by the Dodo Personality Deficit. And the Dodo joins the TARDIS. She walks into the TARDIS, and within 5 seconds goes, "Oh, look, isn't it a space-time machine?"
Oh my
Isn't
God.
Isn't it great? And, you know, you walk into something like that and she goes off on the adventures without nary an argument. And actually, Lucy's reaction is probably much more like it really should be.
That's true.
So back with the Doctor and Clint, the Doctor is trying to say, you know, look, these are Daleks. These are bad, bad, bad things.
Wait, hang on. Is that really what happens? Doesn't Clint arrive at the Dalek ship, though? Because the Daleks go, when Lucy arrives at the spaceship with Gorilla Tom, she goes, "Wait, who's that woman? Is that nuts?" And we hear the Daleks go, "Make way for acting president," well, I was going to say Rosalind, but what's her name?
No, this is before that.
Oh, shit. See, that's why I need to take notes. Okay.
No, the Doctor is still talking to Clint at this point, and he explains what Daleks are. And explains that centuries ago they were people, and you know they were bombarded by atomic weapons, and they had hideous mutations, and now live inside armor. Mm. So on the other hand, Ashtray believes that they are a maligned species, and you know the acting president Clint says that they shouldn't be feared, and the Doctor is just you know standing there in disbelief.
So explain to me, how do we get from where we are right now to President Gustav Klimt going to the Daleks and the Doc and Ashtray going into the lab?
Well,
because this is going to happen very soon.
Yes, the Doctor discovers a hologram generator.
Yes, there we go.
And he turns it off. And there is a big
door.
Locked door.
Yeah, exactly. And... Ash is going, "Well, how are we going to... you can't get through that." And he's very cocky at this point. He's like, "Oh, is this the most elaborate locking mechanism you've ever seen? I'm going to need a couple of minutes."
Zap!
Bam! Gets through the door, and they are in the lab.
Then Griven sticks an electrical cable right in his back, knocking the Doctor out.
There we go. Now I'm... okay, now I've joined the timeline. All right, so she knocks him cold...
Clint is completely horrified about this.
Yeah.
But then she doesn't have time to really be horrified because the Dalek spaceship lands.
There we go.
So AK run outside and see this saucer landing. And bear in mind, to people in a post-apocalyptic planet, this is like a godsend.
Mm.
So
I'm imagining it's basically like all the idiots on top of skyscrapers in Independence Day greeting the aliens with cardboard signs.
Correct. So you have Ashtray going back inside the facility. You have Clint heading off to the Dalek ship, where Lucy and Gorilla Tom are watching it land. And Lucy is mega happy at this point.
She's so chuffed.
It's a flying saucer. It has lights. It's got a landing ramp. These Daleks are cool.
Yes. You know, all those crazy people on Earth who claim to have been abducted by aliens, they had something. Like, they nailed it.
You know, in the lab, Griven arrives and finds that the Doctor has recovered from his electrical shock.
Yep.
And is playing with the secret door with his sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, with the sound effects, you know, anyone that listens to Doctor Who knows the sonic screwdriver sound effect doesn't need explaining. And you just hear that and you know exactly what he's doing. And he gets inside the door.
Yeah. They are now inside the lab. And he already knows, and he reveals that he knows this quite quickly. He says, isn't it true that you are, in fact, Professor Martez? And it turns out, da-da-da, Martez, who everyone thinks died of a sudden stroke just as he was about to, essentially be executed, he performed a brainwave transfer into his assistant and has now taken over her body.
Meanwhile, and this happens a lot, they do cut quite fast between the two different places.
Yeah.
Lucy, from Blackpool, is calling out to the Daleks. She literally goes at one point, "Oi, Mr. Dalek." She wants to go on board this ship. The Daleks are selecting people to go on board the ship.
Yeah, know. And how does she want to get ahead of the queue? She props up her boobs. She pulls her tops ever so slightly down to reveal some cleavage, thinking that maybe she can flirt her way onto the spaceship.
Even Gorilla Tom is shocked by this.
I know.
You know, she says everyone else here being in this post-apocalyptic nuclear winter land is wearing scarves and coats, and she's obviously wearing a halter top from Primark.
Yeah, because she's used to the cold of Blackpool, whereas the others haven't gotten accustomed to not having access to their twin solar system yet.
So Clint, who is with the Daleks, is seen by Lucy. Lucy runs over and, you know, tries to ingratiate herself with Clint on the grounds that she really wants to see this spaceship.
Yeah.
And the Daleks ask Clint, you know, is this your friend? And Clint sort of goes, well, no, but, you know, I do know her. You know, she and her driver, the Doctor.
Yeah. At which point the Daleks go, wait, what did you say?
How the hell does he always know where we are?
Yeah, exactly. And automatically, Lucy gets a backstage pass to the Dalek spaceship.
And she is so happy about it for the 5 minutes it takes to go up the ramp and then be put in a cell.
Yep.
So Clint is taken on board the command deck and meets the Dalek Supreme. And she's told that, you know, the Daleks will help them on one condition. Clint helps them by finding the Doctor.
Exactly.
And the Daleks list the Doctor's crimes. And the Daleks do not in any way exaggerate.
No, it's perfectly true.
Committed genocide, he's a terrorist, and has killed hundreds of thousands of Daleks.
Yeah, even though I'm sure he would prefer to call himself a freedom fighter. Just saying.
Meanwhile, Lucy realizes that Gorilla Tom was right,
yep,
that the Daleks are bad people. And, you know, they're prodding her with their plungers, yep, as she gets put into a cell.
That's pretty hot. Okay.
And coming up to end of part one, back to the Doctor and now Martez,
yeah,
in the body of Ashtray, they realize that in the lab, coming alive are the creatures that Martez has been working on.
Exactly. And we understand, or possibly we're actually even told, that the spaceship that crashed, that Crazy Tom saw years ago, was a Dalek spaceship, because they must have been fighting someone. We get a list of aliens that they may have been fighting from the Doctor. They crashed, he got some parts of the wreckage, maybe even found a Dalek, and essentially started fashioning Daleks of his own using human tissue.
And then the Daleks, well, Martez orders them to kill the Doctor.
Yeah. These are now the new Daleks. We need to differentiate between the Daleks, the Dalek Daleks, and the Martez Daleks.
Yeah, you have the human Daleks.
Okay, human Daleks.
Or the red Daleks. And they're slightly less evil, but we will come on to that.
Yeah, but they're still megalomaniacs.
They're viewing Martez as their creator, as their daddy. Yeah, so when Martez turns around and tells them to kill the Doctor, that's exactly what they do. Cue end of part one.
Yep. And part two starts, still in the lab, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
With the Doctor not having died from the Dalek attack. Because when he was tinkering with a holographic door, it turns out he actually used that to fashion a hologram of himself, which they have now attacked.
This is so 1940s serial, where the end of the episode isn't actually what happened.
Actually, you know what? It is precisely the end of almost every episode of Hartnell so far that we've seen.
Yeah, you rewind, and what you actually saw didn't happen at all.
Exactly.
So he's outside with the hologram generator, and he locks Martez and the Martez Daleks inside.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lucy
in a cell
is not very happy.
But she's joined.
Yeah. Lucy is joined by Gorilla Tom.
Who has a plan.
Yes, he has come to rescue her. Yeah. So he's going to be a hero, which probably means he's going to either die in the next 5 minutes or the Doctor is going to find a granddaughter to marry off to her.
Something that we may have had to have mentioned when we were back at Crazy Tom's Crazy Shack was that he had a boatload of super volatile batteries. Can't remember what kind of batteries, but they were, you probably have this in your notes.
The fusion batteries.
Fusion batteries. And one of the things that we learned at the time when he pulled his gun, the Doctor said, listen, if you miss or there's a ricochet and a bullet hits one of those batteries, this whole place is going to go up in smoke. So now when he is in this cell, it turns out he's got some batteries with him.
And, you know, he finds the control device for the force field. He has a screwdriver of his own. He's very well prepared to break someone out of a Dalek ship.
He is indeed.
And we get some backstory that he got brought on the ship as well. He shows Lucy quite a bad burn that he's got. And he was brought on board the ship with a load of other people.
Yeah.
And they were all questioned about Professor Martez. And then we get a flashback.
And it's terrible. It is genuinely awful to hear this. We hear these terrible cries of woe, the screams of pain and just death as the Daleks killed everyone.
And, you know, he says that he only survived because people had been falling on top of him.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's the audio, the here really shines through because you can imagine the death knells that is coming
from
these people.
So.
Tom hides anyway because at that time, one of the Daleks turns up and wants to talk to Lucy. She, on the other hand, can, you know, hold her own with practically anyone. And she's brought up to talk to Clint and the Daleks on the main ship. Well, she's quite happy to see Clint.
But Clint at this point has already understood that she made a mistake.
Yes, because, you know, the Daleks are trying to tell Clint that, you know, they want the Doctor. Clint is, to her credit, turning around and going, well, we have laws here. We have rules. You know, if we're going to, you know, say that he's a terrorist and a mass murderer, he needs to go on trial. And the Daleks are all like, no. We're not doing that. We are going to shoot him. And, you know, she doesn't want that to happen.
No.
So she's now coming across as someone that genuinely cares for her planet.
Yeah.
You know, she started off being chased by a mob. You didn't know what she was doing. Listening to Gorilla Tom and, you know, knowing that Griven is this mad professor now.
Yeah.
You could be forgiven for thinking that Clint was just as corrupt as everyone else. But she didn't take the seat on the the spaceship that left, purely because she did really want to protect their people.
I was going
to
say exactly that. That was one of the first things that Ashtray said about her, that she was a genuine down-to-earth martyr, taken one for Team Humanity, basically.
Meanwhile, in the lab...
Ooh, wait, hang on. What happens in the lab? I don't remember this. I remember what happens next with Lucy, but I don't remember what happens in the lab.
The doctor is talking to Martez and Ashtray's body and, you know, trying to bring out the inner Ashtray and failing miserably. And, you know, Driven turns around and basically says that the doctor shouldn't judge her because the doctor's an alien. You know, she's doing what is best for mankind. And, you know, there is this good conversation about whether Martez is actually trying to do something good for mankind here. Yeah. You know, change the evolution of the human race in order to survive on this irradiated, you know, nuclear post-apocalyptic wasteland. Sadly, the doctor then hears the Daleks again. And the Daleks basically turn around to everyone on Red Rocket Rising and say, there's a dangerous criminal out there. He's called the doctor. Seek, locate, destroy.
Yeah. And they've also got a microphone strapped to Lucy's face. Saying, describe the doctor and what's going on. Who is this man? What can you tell everyone about him so that he's more easily located? And she doesn't necessarily give the most flattering description of him.
No, and you know, for the first time, you know, they ask her what her name is. She says her name is Lucy Bleeding Miller. So she's standing on a Dalek spaceship with a microphone. And she calls herself Lucy Bleeding Miller to the Daleks. And remember that, because it will become very, very poignant 40 episodes down the line.
Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to that. Ends.
Because this story and the final story bookend each other nicely. So just remember how she introduced herself.
Okay, Lucy Bleeding Miller. So now the Daleks are going to get her to go and find the Doctor. Am I
correct?
Right? I am right. And they land again. She's going to take them back to where she first saw the Doctor. And she does so. They find the Doctor. I may be speeding through this, by the way. I apologize if I am. But they find the Doctor. They start firing shots in their direction. They escape. And oddly, no one follows them. So they turn around. Oh, you're about to say something.
No, that's...
I've missed something, haven't I? What have I missed?
You missed some talking between Martez and her Daleks.
Ah, okay, go for it.
And she decides that she wants to go and introduce her Daleks to the world so they can fulfill their destiny. Because she thinks that these Daleks are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, you know, these are the future of humanity.
And Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, there's a really, really good thing here because the Martez Daleks have very different voices. They're slower and a bit more gravelly.
Yeah, but they're also a little bit more personable in a way.
Yeah, they have a bit more personality behind them, and we'll come on to one of those later. But they're obviously less refined than the standard Dalek model.
Okay, that's true.
And then we skip, forward and... The Doctor and Lucy have that gunfire and run off, and then they turn round.
And what do they see but a meeting of the clans, as the Doctor puts it. So we now have them eavesdropping on a conversation between Dalek Daleks and Martez Daleks. And this meeting is not going as well as the Martez Daleks expected, because the Dalek Daleks are basically saying that they contain genetic impurities. These are not pure Daleks. There's something in there contaminating their Dalek heritage, and for that reason, they must be exterminated.
And we also get the backstory of why Red Rocket Rising is like it is. The Daleks admit that they heard Martez say, stealing the original technology from the crashed Dalek ship, realize that they don't want
any fake Daleks being created, and they've turned up at Rocket Rising to make sure that that's not still going on.
Well, not just that. The entire reason that the planet is a radioactive wasteland was due to the meteor that hit.
Yeah, which
so
was...
the asteroid that hit, and it was the Daleks that did it.
Yeah, exactly. They blew some asteroids off its original trajectory to contaminate the planet's atmosphere.
They've had enough of each other now, and they start shooting at each other.
Yeah. One single Martez Dalek survives. Barely. We learn from the Dalek Daleks that the Martez Daleks actually have superior firepower, but this Martez Dalek returns to Martez.
Back at the lab!
Yeah, meanwhile, back at the lab. Martez is having a conversation with this dying Martez Dalek and explaining... I'm so sorry, everyone in podcast land. I'm so sorry, JD. I should have taken notes. I was listening to this whilst working. I hope my boss.
No. You were actually at the right point, but I felt really sorry for this Dalek at this point, and it is a testament to Nick Briggs and the way he does the Dalek voice that the Martez Dalek is talking to Martez in Ashtray's body.
Mm.
And it dies.
It dies, but before dying, Martez explains to him that it is actually the superior one. It's the other Daleks are just jealous, more or less. They are afraid that they will be superfluous in the galaxy once the Martez Daleks have taken over, and that they'll just be replaced. And for that reason, at least this poor dying Martez Dalek gets to go out with a smile on his mutated face. Because he feels that he is the superior kind. It's really sad. It's a very sad scene.
And it is actually really sad.
It's like a really violent child dying, because this thing is not very bright. I mean, it's not a socially developed creature.
So outside, the remaining Daleks from the Dalek faction catch up with Lucy and the Doctor.
Yeah.
And they're about to kill the Doctor, because that's what they do.
We have come to help, fish and chips for all.
But the Doctor does his normal, and...
He basically says that he has information, which made me think of the Dalek invasion of Earth, where Barbara manages to get access to the Dalek commander, he's called, in the Dalek invasion of Earth? Only by saying that she has information. And it seems as though, even though the Daleks are actually out to exterminate everything that isn't a Dalek, they do value data. If there is any kind of tangible information, they want it. And the Doctor says he has information he needs to speak to. He says, take me to your leader. Tries to pawn off Lucy so that she can escape, but they insist that either she gets killed or she comes with them. So they are now heading back to the Dalek spaceship.
Bickering loudly at each other. And you really feel for the poor Dalek that is escorting them, who keeps telling them to shut up, and they both ignore them. You know, you could just see that the Dalek will be so glad to drop these off at the Dalek Supreme and go back to its normal, boring duty and not have to listen to these two.
So now we get a very strange situation where the Doctor, I don't know if this has happened before, but I've certainly never seen it before, the Doctor joins forces with the Daleks in order to combat the Martez Daleks.
Yeah, and you can see why he's doing it, because... You've now got two factions of Daleks. He wants to get rid of both of them, and the only way to get rid of one of them is to join forces with the known quantity, the Dalek Daleks.
Exactly.
But Lucy, you know, has been put into her cell, and Gorilla Tom magically appears once more, because he's not left the ship. He's just sat there waiting for them to come back, you know, knowing that they were going to be recaptured, because Lucy, you know, is quite obviously this damsel in distress.
Is it at this point where he goes, I brought some extra tinfoil for you?
Yes. He has a tinfoil hat just for Lucy, and she doesn't wear it, which is quite sad.
It's the thought that counts. It's a very nice gesture on his part. But so he now, he has a secondary plan. He has his batteries, and he wants to, I don't know if we find out about this right now, but his plan is essentially he wants to blow up the ship. There's no rescuing them, there's no rescuing the other people on the ship, and he says he's very sorry. He really thought that Lucy would get away, But now that she's on the ship, unfortunately, they have no choice. They need to blow up the ship, because at the very least, they can rescue the humans who are still on the planet. And so while that's going on, the Doctor is at the same time leading the Daleks to the lab, hovering over the planets, telling them, this is where the lab is, you need to bomb the hell out of it.
Clint is not very happy, because she's a bit miserable that this is going to kill a lot of civilians. The Doctor says they're only after one block, they know exactly where they're going, one single missile right into that building is going to be absolutely fine.
No dice.
Sadly, the Daleks are out of missiles.
Yeah, and the only option, they think, is to set the ship on a collision course with the surface, with the lab itself, which would take out a lot more than just one building. Not to mention that the Doctor is on board, as is Lucy and Gustav Klimt and Crazy Tommy. So everyone's going to die.
So the Daleks are now heading, they say they're going to reach their target in 90 rels.
Yep.
And
arbitrary, but okay.
Tom and Lucy are in the cell, and they've heading to go and blow the Dalek ship up.
Yeah,
and the
Daleks are evacuating. They're just flying off.
So Lucy is trying to talk Tom out of this insane plan, which will involve him dying and mainly her dying.
Yeah.
And so Tom gets ready. Pulls out his trusty battery destruction device.
Yep.
And prepares to blow up the ship. But Lucy is having none of this.
Yeah, and through this little scene between them, somehow he does manage to detonate, but it doesn't blow up the ship. It just has an effect on, I guess, the engine. Because instead of crashing into the lab, the ship remains intact, and it just lands with, as the Doctor will explain later on, with a small bang as opposed to a large crash?
Yeah, it can't get up enough speed to ram into the building.
Exactly.
So it sort of just fizzles out. And in the lab, Martez hears this, Dalek ship approaching, and she's getting ready to send her Daleks out. And, prevent these Daleks from destroying all of her people on Red Rocket Rising.
Not just that, she's creating more of them.
So, the spaceship crashes, it's on the ground.
The Doctor joins Lucy and Crazy Tommy.
Because they've managed all to survive, including Clint.
Yeah.
for some strange reason, and they find out that Crazy Tom didn't actually blow it up. A Dalek shot at him and shot the explosives.
There we go. That's what happened.
So the Doctor is absolutely pissed off that Tom was going to blow up the Dalek spaceship.
He's got a great line there. He's like, oh, very good. So you actually meant to blow this up, because I wouldn't want someone to do something that stupid and not on purpose.
And Lucy just points out the complete hypocrisy of this by pointing out that he was about to blow them up anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah. And he resigns. In the end, he has to admit, he thanks, Crazy Tommy for saving the day, more or less.
Yeah, because the Doctor and Lucy are still, at this point, not really working together as a team. So, the Daleks are arriving in force now.
Yeah.
And, you have the Dalek Supreme, who also survived this crash. It was the worst spaceship crash in living memory, because no one apparently died in it.
I know, I was thinking that as well. Were there any casualties? I'm not sure there were. Not that we found out about, anyway.
So, the Doctor and team take cover, and a load of Daleks turn up.
Yeah.
And then a load of Martez Daleks turn up. And
the Doctor tells Crazy Tommy, listen, back at your crazy shack, you had loads of weapons and all kinds of kablamo-y stuff. Why don't you go and get that stuff? And basically, while the Daleks are taking each other out, they're going to flank them. The humans are going to flank them, toting weapons.
But we do get Lucy and the Doctor having a heart-to-heart, and they do have a little bit of a happy moment when the Doctor says that there's no way he's going to leave in the TARDIS.
Exactly. And that wouldn't help. It wouldn't make a difference if they left. And she basically goes, oh, so you've got guts.
And, you know, it is just that little bit of softening of Lucy Miller's character.
Yeah, because he, correct me if I'm wrong, he says, oh, is that something else that the Time Lord said about me? And she goes, no, that's all me, but don't let it get to your head.
Yes.
It's really and sweet, actually.
It is. And, you know, you get to the point where had Lucy had continued like she was at the start of this episode, we would get bored very quickly.
Yeah.
We needed
this time for them to antagonize each other so that their friendship would ultimately be even more validated.
So the Daleks are fighting, and the other Daleks are fighting, and they're destroying their own genetic duplicates.
Yeah, and Martez is having a chat with one of her Martez Daleks, being utterly shocked by the fact that the Dalek Daleks are not there to just join forces, to embrace them as part of their joint future.
And Gorilla Tom does what he does best, and at the head of an angry mob, brings in all the people that were trying to kill Clint at the start of the episode, are now trying to kill the Daleks. And they are not discriminating. A Dalek is a Dalek.
Yeah.
They're killing the Martez Daleks, they're killing the Dalek Daleks, and Martez is just completely overwhelmed by the fact that humans would, you know, attack their own Daleks.
Yeah. At this point, we also get the first indication that the brainwave transfer may have had adverse effects on her physiognomy. She's not feeling very well at all. She's actually dying, but she still goes on and she keeps birthing more Daleks in a scene that actually sounds as though she's practically birthing them.
And that was too much of a graphic image for me right at this time.
Apologies.
And the Doctor turns up. You know, he made a bomb earlier to blow it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, Martez and the Martez Dalek are there. And he blows them up, thinking he's destroyed the birthing chamber. But it appears that the Eighth Doctor cannot build a bomb to save his life. And all he manages to do is destroy one single Dalek.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Doctor tells Martez that this has all happened before. You know, it is just going to be destruction, it is going to be miserable, it's going to be, you know, one group of Dalek fighting another, whoever wins is going to go off the planet and try and take over the universe.
He also says something that I don't know if I remember seeing this or reading this or hearing about it, but he says that he was there when the Daleks were first created.
And in Genesis of the Daleks, with Tom Baker, he was in this exact position.
Oh, I see. That's
he was there with the creator of the Daleks, in the birthing chamber of the Daleks, and he had the ability to destroy them.
But he didn't.
He didn't do it. And the Eighth Doctor here in this, is obviously really regretting not doing it.
Yeah.
So he tried to, and sadly his bomb just wasn't big enough.
Yeah. So she says. So then, instead of just pulling the plug himself, and she even tells him, listen, you've got me at a disadvantage. I'm weak. You could just pull the plug. You could kill me right now. But he basically just goes, no, you deal with it. This is your problem. And he storms out.
You know, he has to know at this point that she's going to die a horrible, horrible death, maybe within the next 2 minutes.
That's true, but those 2 minutes could be... She could use those 2 minutes to birth even more Daleks. He could actually just pull the plug and go, and now you die, or quote-unquote natural causes. But I'm going to pull the plug just in case. I mean, come on, that would make more sense.
It would indeed, but he's obviously just being evil at the moment.
Yeah. Oh and my god, I can't wait till we get to his parting words with the Daleks. Okay, no, spoiler alert. Let's go on.
And, so Martez is there and...
Is joined by a Dalek.
Is joined by a Dalek who turns around and says that the reinforcements are needed.
Yeah, exactly. And she goes, but they're not reinforcements. They're your brothers. They're your kin. She realizes the Doctor was right. These Daleks are just hell-bent on destruction.
And she pulls the plug.
She does. Well done, Martez.
For the 3 seconds remaining in her life.
Yeah, because the Dalek is not pleased at all. And he blasts the shit out of her.
Meanwhile, with Gorilla Tom... Gorilla Tom, Lucy and Clint have possibly the weirdest idea I have heard in a very long time. They've set up, on the roof of a building, some transmitters.
Yes.
And they've got a lot of colonists all on the roof with a lot of bricks and rubble. And this in no way can end badly. So, they switch on the transmitter. It doesn't work. So they boost up the power.
Yeah.
And all the Daleks get hit by this massive, massive wave of, you know, 1970s top of the pops music. And, you know, they all start going wobbly and...
Yeah, they get a migraine. When this happens, Lucy is saying, yeah, the doc mentioned earlier that high frequencies will give Daleks migraines. I don't remember him saying that.
No, I don't remember him saying that either. But then they decide to throw rocks on the Daleks.
Yeah.
So the Daleks, which can shrug off bullets, can fly through space, are pretty much impervious to anything. When they have a headache, can be killed by having a rock thrown at them.
I don't know why you have that incredulous look on your face. That makes perfect sense to me.
After the rubble dies down, yeah, and, you know, the colonists have dropped every single pebble, we see that the Dalek Supreme and two of the Maltese Daleks are left standing. The Dalek Supreme blasts one of the Maltese Daleks, and then it is a one-on-one showdown for the fate of humanity. The Doctor and Lucy head down, and there's, you know, it's one-on-one. The Dalek Supreme and the Maltese Dalek are both badly injured. It's obvious that they're not going to last for the next few minutes.
Yeah, they're still going on about genetic impurities and whatnot.
And literally, the Dalek Supreme is just muttering that, you know, damn you, Doctor, you foiled my plans once more.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Doctor is trying. He's turning around and going, you know, don't you have any compassion? Just say something. Yeah.
Surprise me.
And sadly, the Dalek Supreme uses the last of its power sources to blow up the Maltese Dalek.
Yeah.
And then blows itself up.
Yeah, but before he does, we have some amazing final words from McGann Doctor to Dalek. Shall we?
Yes, let's. Soundbite!
Soundbite!
You will be
and you will not.
Which is so intense. This is a very different Doctor.
It's a massively different Doctor. You know, this is not someone warm and cuddly. He is someone who is a bit weary, I would say. You know, he's a bit darker. He's a bit more passionate.
Yeah.
So Eileen Clint, who has somehow survived through the entire episode, broadcasts to everyone remaining on the planet that they shouldn't give up hope.
Yeah, because, oh my God, she will never learn.
You know,
people shouldn't give up hope because another race of aliens is now coming to the rescue. These people...
From the planet Tel.
Yeah.
And then it cuts off.
And then it cuts off. And Tel is Telos, correct?
Tell is we never find out, and
oh, we don't.
You know, okay. No, we don't find out. But you know, ultimately, you can imagine it comes from Telos, which is the planet of the Cybermen.
Yeah, it's going to be. And what they survived with the Daleks just a moment ago is now going to go down one more time, but with the Cybermen. I'm surprised that we don't find out. I was sort of hoping for not immediately, but sometime down the line, maybe a sequel where the same people have to encounter the Cybermen instead?
Well, the one good thing about Big Finish, I keep saying the one good thing, that there's many good things, is that they do this a lot. They do revisit things. And, you know, a minor character in an early Big Finish audio comes back to be one of the Seventh Doctor's companions.
Hmm.
And, you know, we're talking 4 years after the audio she was a bit part in. Wow. And there is a lot of this. So Big Finish might end up revisiting Red Rocket Rising as a planet of Cybermen.
Well, here's hoping.
So we get our final scenes.
Yeah, fade to the after party. People are having a lot of fun, except there's no booze, as Lucy will not stop pointing out. And she walks in on the Doctor tinkering with the TARDIS, basically saying, well, I figured maybe I would see if you still stuck around to see if I could join you.
The Doctor, on the other hand, says, well, I've tried to leave you full time, but the TARDIS keeps bringing me back.
And she is really pissed off. It's like, oh, what? At the first chance you get, you try to strand me on this barren planet?
But Lucy wants to see what's out there, yeah. And the Doctor really, really doesn't have a choice.
Exactly, and now she's seen the Doctor for who he really is. He's not this crazy Martian that she thought he was in the first place. He is now an actual good guy, he's a hero. And someone who is, although, he is a person who can be at once egotistical and selfless. He cares about these people, he cares about humanity, but he is also a little bit of a dick.
And you've got to think somehow that between Lucy, between this episode and Night of the Doctor, she has some good on him to change that Edwardian frock coat into the leather-jacketed wonder that turns up in Night of the Doctor. But that isn't quite where it ends. So the Doctor and Lucy are off, but we get a mystery cutaway.
Yeah, and we eavesdrop on a phone call, a space phone call, between someone named Mr. Halbert, or Halpert, and a woman who refers to herself, or is referred to as, the Headhunter.
And she promises that no matter where in time and space that Lucy Miller goes, she cannot hide from her.
Yeah. The end. Oh my god.
So this was your first audiobook?
This was my first audiobook. I was just about to say, this was my very first one. I mean, my very first Doctor Who one. I loved it. Oh my god, I loved it. I haven't listened to the second one yet, but I will. And when I do, I will be taking notes and the next one is going to be a lot more detailed, I promise. But this was fantastic. I'm so grateful to you for having put me onto this whole audiobook spiel. This is great. Is this?
And, you know, it is a good way to introduce new people to Doctor Who, you know, because it allows them to imagine everything rather than, you know, watch Classic Who or New Who, you know, and someone might not have seen McGann, you know, the 1996 movie, which I personally cannot wait for you and Flappy to review because it is wrist-slittingly funny. This is the McGann that you could have had on television as a continuation of Doctor Who, and how good was he?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if listening to this audiobook is a great idea if you haven't seen any Doctor Who, but if you've seen enough Doctor Who, it doesn't have to be much, but if you've seen enough to at least know who he is, and or the kind of character that he is, and to at the very least be somewhat intrigued by learning more about him when he's not dilly-dallying with Hollywood personalities on screen, this is sort of the very rough, honest, just in-your-face Doctor Who. It's like reading his secret diary. This was fantastic.
So, reviews?
Reviews. Okay, your review is probably going to be a lot more detailed and a lot more knowledgeable than mine, because you've listened to a few of these. You haven't listened to all of them, you mentioned, but you've listened to quite a few.
No. I haven't listened to all of them, but I'm actually looking forward to going through all of them. And, you know, this one I've now listened to 3 times in a row. So there are some incredibly good audiobooks coming up. You know, not just from the McGann, but from the other Doctors as well. And, you know, this is, as I said, a good jumping off point. And, you know, it is a good story to start off the audio adventures. It reintroduces McGann to the audience quite well. Mm. And you see it through the eyes of Lucy Miller. The Daleks are as full as menace as they ever was, and they needed to be here. It needed to legitimize the audiobooks as something that you can listen to. Lucy arriving in the TARDIS at the start was great. Sadly, then it did slow down a little bit. So, you know, the rampaging mob and Clint and Griven, that was a much slower until the Daleks turned up. And then it kicks into high gear. Paul McGann and Sheridan Smith are great with each other. You know, even though they spend the entire episode bickering, they, you know, it is the Donna Noble sort of bickering with the Doctor.
Yeah.
But they have a great chemistry, even when they're shouting at each other. And, you know, it's easy to mark things quite highly. But, you know, I'd give this one a 4.1 out of 5 because I know that there is better to come. And I do know that this nicely bookends a story which goes all the way through the Eighth Doctor Adventures and ends with a perfect opposite bookmark. So 4.1 out of 5.
4.1, very nice. Okay, well, I think my review is going to be more of an addendum than anything else. What can I say that you haven't said already? Paul McGann is fantastic. I have to reiterate that. He is such a high-caliber, high-quality actor that even when you don't see him, we were talking about this earlier off the record, even when you don't see him on screen, you just hear him. Through his voice shines the quality that he brings to the part. And he's just so much more adult, so much more grown up. And like I said to you earlier, before we pressed record, one of the things that really, really just gripped me with this story is that it is a grown-up Doctor Who story. This is not Doctor Who for the whole family, for the kids. There are some seriously dark and just grim, violent, terrifying aspects to the story that as a no longer 12-year-old watching Tom Baker episodes, now listener as opposed to viewer of Doctor Who, very much still a fan, I appreciate a lot more, and I want to see more of this. And when you told me before we pressed record that it's just going to get darker, I cannot express in words how pleased I am to hear that, because I love that. It's so good. Plus, add to that what I said in Dalek Invasion of Earth, I am partial to post-apocalyptic scenarios. I think they're just fascinating and so entertaining. This is just that. Loved it. I'm going to give this a 4.0. I'm maybe bumping that score up a little bit because even though I haven't heard it, I know that this is part of a much broader legacy of Doctor Who stories. And as such, I know that when I get to the end, I'm going to love this one story even more than I do now. So 4.0 from me. Fantastic. Thank you so much for introducing me to this, dude.
My pleasure. And next time...
Oh my God, next time we will be reviewing... Okay. Seriously, is this the title? We're going to be reviewing Horror of Glam Rock.
It's 1974, it's the year of my birth, and it's co-starring Stephen Gately, Eunice Stubbs, and Bernard Cribbins.
Bernard Cribbins? No way! Oh my God, I'm so looking forward to this. I'm going to be listening to this tomorrow. This is going to be great. Ladies and gentlemen, obviously no one had told you that we would be reviewing an audiobook this time. So there are no listener reviews besides our own. But if you're interested, please do send in your reviews of Horror of Glam Rock, which is a fantastic title. And we'll read them out on the air next week. As I said, Flappy will be returning in approximately 1 month, and we'll continue with the TV serial reviews. We'll be returning with the Space Museum. And hopefully you will not have been discouraged by this very first audiobook review, JD. I hope that you will still continue to review audiobooks with me, even when Flappy returns. And by the way, Flappy, in case you're listening, I hope you're enjoying the Maldives. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to follow JD on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. Please be in as much awe of this man's knowledge of Doctor Who as I am. And JD, thank you so much. I am at Ponkin. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Subscribe to the RSS feed, subscribe to us on iTunes, and please do leave a rating and review on iTunes as well, because it does help the show. And what more can I say? Catch you next week.
Goodbye.
Ciao, ciao, people. Ciao, ciao.
Who back when?